passengers with the camera. If you are going to take photographs, can you please turn your flash off? It's most important on the underground. Can you turn your flash off when you use the camera? And next time, if you're going to take a photograph, can you ensure that I'm smiling, please?
G'day, I'm Erk, and welcome to episode number one of On the Rails with Erk, a railway slash train slash railroad podcast, which is just perfect for you if you are into anything that runs on rails, including trains, subways, light rail, heavy rail, call it what you will. The terminology does vary from region to region and country to country, but this is a personal podcast. The opinions on this podcast are not those of any organisation or any rail operator, and the terminology and the procedures and whatnot, they do vary from country to country, region to region, and even within the one organisation. So, as I've mentioned in the preview episodes, this is a personal podcast where I look back at my railway career so far, and also talk about some of the issues that are happening in the rail industry around the world. This is what I believe to be a rarity in the podcasting world. There's a lot of different aviation podcasts out there. Some of them have actually inspired me to start this podcast. There's so many aviation podcasts out there. But if you're into trains and things railroad, railways, call it what you will, there's not so much. So here am I, breaching some sort of gap. I don't know where this is going necessarily. I've got some plans for the podcast, but we don't know where it's going to go. So if you have something that you want to contribute, feel free to contact me via ontherailswitherk.com. You can also find me via channelerk.com. This is a Channel Erk podcast, of course. I can't necessarily go into the specifics of my operator, and I'll do my best not even to identify them, because as I've said, and as other people have found in social media, these aren't necessarily the views, and it's not an official podcast of any particular operator. So if I keep things generic and I don't necessarily explain procedures at my place of employment, that will be the reason why. So on episode one, I thought that I would tell you my story. And then from episode two, we'll see what happens. I can go into some more detail about some of the things, share some of my experiences, and who knows, you might actually be an industry person who wants to talk to me. And if you don't want to be identified by a job title or whatever, that's fine. I can do that as well. So my story, it is now 2013. And I've been employed by my employer for 19 years. Like many people who get onto the railway industry, I wanted to be a train driver since I was a little kid. There are some families out there that have generations of people who work in a railway environment. You get many generations of people, you know, you really do become part of the railway family, so to speak. Your father was a train driver, so you get to experience what he experiences. You get to see what he's like when he comes off the job. You have to adapt to his shift work and all of that sort of stuff. You find out that the money's not bad, and so you get interested in it as well. That's often what happens. But for me, I don't really have a family background in the industry, apart from the fact that there have been people in my family that catch trains to work. And that's pretty much my family background into it. I don't have a family history of trains in terms of working in the industry. I do have a history of people who have encouraged my train watching, my mum and my auntie especially, and that sort of thing. But not necessarily, I didn't really have anybody in the family who had worked in the industry. When I was a kid, I was lucky enough to live beside the main Western railway line. In one place that I had, that I lived in when I was about 4 or 5, from the balcony of my apartment, I could directly see the trains. Well, I could at least see them after my mum gave me a small stool that I could use to step up so I can see over the balcony, because of course I was a child. She was concerned about me possibly wanting to climb over the railing and onto the ground below. I was on the third floor, and that was the top floor of this apartment building. But I just wanted to watch the trains. And I can remember asking her one day, you know, where do the trains sleep? So all sorts of trains used to go past at that time. You had the local suburban electric passenger trains. You had the long distance diesel passenger trains, the locomotive hauled passenger trains. Freight trains. There was a lot of steam tours in the winter time that used to go past, and there was a lot of work trains on weekends when they did track work in the area. The station that I lived near had a lot of these times in about 2 different places. In time, they were getting rid of the pedestrian level crossing and putting in an overbridge. So there were a few close downs for that, and so I was able to watch the process of what happens when they rebuild a railway station, for instance. When I moved to another location, I wasn't necessarily having a sight of the railway line, but early in the morning, especially in the middle of winter, I can hear the trains passing by. When I was at school, in both primary school and high school, my school had a direct line of sight from various places to the railway line. So if I was at recess or lunch, I could often be seen near the fence watching the trains go past and wishing that it was me driving that train. Unlike many boys, I wasn't really interested in the freight side of things. I was more interested in moving people from point A to point B, and I knew that to do that, the best place to do that would be on the local passenger trains. Also, when I was playing sport, I used to play a lot of cricket in the summer. And so there were certain grounds that I had a visual on the train tracks. And so when I was in the outfield, for instance, when I was fielding or when I was waiting to bat, I could see the railway line and the various trains that passed by. So as you can imagine, I've seen a lot of trains while I was either playing sport or while I was at school, or I'd go for a bike ride down to the local train station when I was a kid. And so I'd always wonder about what it would be like to be on those trains. However, I wasn't actually on those trains as much as I would have liked. Occasionally, my auntie would have to do a trip into the city, and she would take me during school holidays. And so that was a big trip on the train in those days as a child. But unfortunately for me, she'd take the hour train trip into the city, always off peak because it was cheaper to travel as it is now, cheaper to travel in the off-peak period. And, you know, it was crowded in the morning peak period. So we'd always go off-peak. You know, we'd leave about 9 or 10 o'clock, maybe 11 o'clock in the morning. We'd go into town, into the town, into the capital city, and then we'd do what we'd have to do, have lunch, and then catch the first train back. We'd always be back before the afternoon peak hour started. But it may surprise you, with hindsight, that for the majority of my childhood, being a child and then into a teenager, I actually wasn't allowed on a train by myself until I was about 16, which is rather ironic considering my history. When I was about 13 or 14, I started railway photography. Not always with a lot of success. I didn't have, you know, fancy cameras or anything like that. My local town had a hobby shop which sold model trains and also railway magazines and videos and the like. I did have a model train set for a while as a child, but didn't have a lot of room for it. I can remember being a small child and being on school holidays, and a rare luxury for me was being able to lay the track on the floor in the lounge room, and then being able to leave it set up as it was for a few days at a time before having to dismantle it again. Later on, my mum and my uncle paid to have a small layout built on board so it would fit under my bed, but I don't have any of that anymore. Growing up, I knew that I wanted to be a train driver. It was the one thing above anything else that I wanted to do. When I was in high school, when I was about 15 or 16, approaching the age that I could first leave school, I was thinking about my options. But at the time, there was a planned reduction in the number of people that would be working on the railways in my local area. What happened was that they were bringing in ticket machines and ticket barriers. So the plan was to reduce the number of people that was actually working on the railways. So if it was harder to get in, it would be harder for me to get a job. And so I needed a plan B. This wasn't helped, however, by a couple of weeks of what we call work experience here in Australia, where you basically go to a workplace as a high school student and you just watch and observe and, where possible, do some of the work to give you as the name would suggest, to give you a taste of what the job would actually be like. My very first week of work experience, there was one thing that I knew that I wanted to do. I knew that they wouldn't let me drive a train at the age of 15 or 16. I knew that. And so the next best thing that I could possibly do to be in the same industry was to work on a train station. I knew that I didn't want to work in a mechanics workshop, for instance, or I didn't want to work in an office. You know, I didn't want to do anything like that. I didn't want to be a builder or join the army or anything like that. I wanted to work on the railways and I wanted to drive a train. That's what I wanted to do. So, somewhat surprisingly, I didn't know if they'd be able to arrange it, but my careers advisor managed it. He managed to get me a week working on a train station. Now, we're talking about the year 1990. So, I was told that basically I was to turn up to the station at 6 a.m, dressed in blue, and they'd look after me. So, what did I do for that week? Well, for that week, a lot of my time was spent cleaning the station. picking up litter and that sort of stuff, I knew that they'd call that particular process butterflying. You know, just walk around the platform and you'd scoop up the rubbish into the scoop, clean the toilets, that sort of thing. Sometimes help the passengers. I even got to make some announcements, because this was before the era of pre-recorded announcements, and so I thought this was really good. And then as a bonus, and one that I was totally not expecting, there was a train that went up a couple of stations up the line, it terminated, and it came back. The station manager actually arranged each day for me to go on this particular train, and he'd speak with the driver and he'd explain to the driver that I was on work experience and was it okay if I came along for the ride. That was usually halfway through the shift, and needless to say, it was the highlight of the shift. I'd go up a couple of stations until the end of that train's particular run. I'd change ends with the driver from one end to the other, and then come back the couple of stations to the station where I was at. And then after that, of course, I'd be all excited, and then I'd have something to eat. And then, of course, you have the good bit, so to go with it, you've got to have the bad bit afterwards. So after that, I'd have to clean the toilets. But that was fine, because I was still buzzing from the train ride. And as I found out since, it usually wasn't the same driver every day, so I got to speak to 5 separate drivers on those days. So if I knew before that I wanted to become a train driver, after that, I definitely knew that I wanted to become a train driver. Until that point, I'd been on a train as a passenger, but now I had been up the front in what I still argue is one of the best views that you can have on a train, up the front and out the front window. And I still love the view every time I do it. Later on in that same year, it was traditional that the people had 1 week in what we call year 10, and then, which to Americans would be like the last year of junior high, and then you'd have another week in the first week of senior high, to put it in that way, year 10 and year 11 for the Australians playing along at home, or if you're old school Australian, fourth form and fifth form. But for some reason, the year above me, they either didn't want to or they couldn't have their week of work experience. So at short notice, they asked my year if we wanted to go on work experience again. And of course, that was a good thing to do, so we did. So at short notice, they asked our preferences, and I was quite happy to go back to the same station to do what I was doing before. But no, the careers advisor actually did one better. He actually managed to get me to go along with some of the supervisors of the people who drive the trains. And so I learnt things that I know now in my current job. For instance, how to read what we call a diagram, which tells me where I'm going on a day-to-day basis. I learnt things about how do they investigate how trains run late. And we also got to go on a few train rides up the front around parts of the network that I'd never been on before. So, in actual fact, I wasn't necessarily doing anything. I was observing and absorbing a lot, but not necessarily doing anything. Of course, they're not going to let a 16-year-old kid drive a train. So I knew at that point that I wanted to, and I could, with, of course, the proper training, drive a train. So that was 1990, my last year of being a junior in high school. In the couple of years that followed, of course, I'd heard that there was a lot of time where the workforce was being shrunken down and not a lot of people were being hired. So I needed a plan B. My plan B was to become a journalist, which is slightly ironic considering what I do now. So I studied reasonably hard in senior high school, didn't get the marks that I wanted to, pardon me, get into journalism. And so my plan C, after spending a summer working in a video game arcade, was to go to technical college for a year and learn things about computers and to work in office administration and do that course for a year. So I did that course, passed that course. I was actually only one of two guys in that course. A lot of the people that I was up against were women fresh out of high school. And so I was going for a lot of office jobs and not having a lot of luck, because on reception they want pretty hot young blonde things, which wasn't me. So I was going down that path, and then one day I was down at my local job centre and I saw an advertisement to work at a station. Now, I hadn't seen these advertised in the newspaper or anything like that, and of course this is pre-internet. So I've applied for that position, and I've also applied for a position working as a storeman slash admin guy at a building supplies company. So I was interviewed for both positions, and actually got both positions. The one in the building construction factory was full-time. The one that was on the railway was 6 months as a temporary. But I thought long and hard, and I thought, well, 6 months of doing something that I really want to do compared to full-time, possibly for the rest of my life, doing something that I don't want to do, no thank you. So even if the temporary job on the railway lasts for 6 months, I've got 6 months worth of experience that I wouldn't have had before, so I did that job. So after the interview and the selection process was finished, I reported to that particular station. It was Valentine's Day 1994, and that's how I remember the day that I started, because it was Valentine's Day. My job was basically to clean the station, and my hours had actually been cut back from 8 hours a day to 4 hours a day. But I was still temporary for 6 months. So I was getting used to what is effectively a different culture than the one I was used to. You learn a different language, basically, with all your jargon and your abbreviations and the way things are done, the culture. But I fit in really well. And even though I wasn't necessarily supposed to assist the public, I was just there as a cleaner. I really enjoyed that side of it. After a month, I was offered a 12-month temporary job at another station, but there would be a slight increase in pay, and there would be a increase in my hours from 4 hours a day to 8 hours a day. And an increase in my tenure, so to speak, from temporary 6 months to temporary 12 months. So I did it. I had some people warning me against it, but I did it. I went to this new station. There was a lot of cleaning, but in the 18 months or so that I was there as a temporary, I learned a lot of skills. I knew that I could do a lot of the jobs. I was multi-skilled. I could work on the station, cleaning. I could work on the ticket barrier. I could work on the platform, and of course I can go into some detail on a later episode about these particular jobs and what they were. And then suddenly, after about 18 months on the job, I received a letter in the internal mail saying, "Congratulations, you are now a permanent member of staff. Here's your new employee number." And so I knew from that time on that I was permanent and I could apply for other positions that I wanted to, because I couldn't do that as a temporary. At that time, and they still do it, in my organisation at least, it's easier to hire someone as a temporary staff member, and if they don't work out, they can be let go, but if they do work out, they can be made permanent, and so that's what happened to me. Soon after, I went into what is called generally revenue protection, basically a ticket inspector. And so I did that on stations and on trains for about the next 3.5-4 years, finishing that job as a team leader. And of course, in future episodes, I'll go more into detail of what that actually involves as well. And then of course, at that time, in that sort of law enforcement environment, you can get a bit jaded, you can get a bit cynical. And so after about 3.5-4 years in that role, I decided to move on, and I moved into a control room environment, working in the main security center. Again, I'll tell you more about that in upcoming episodes, but I was there for 3.5-4 years over the Olympic period, and so I'd learnt many computer skills doing that particular course and that particular job, but it wasn't getting me any closer to becoming a train driver, which was my dream. So what I did was I made, in 2001, I made the first step to becoming a train driver. I became a train guard, and basically my job was to look after the passengers and open and close the doors on the train. So I knew then that the best way to become a train driver from where I was in the organisation was to be a guard first. One of your jobs was to assist the driver in things like mechanical and safe working and that sort of stuff, train operations. But primarily, the way it was explained to me as a train guard is that I'd be in charge of the passengers and the driver would be in charge of the train. Of course, being a train guard would be a great help in eventually becoming a train driver. I was a train guard for about, again, 3 or 4 years. That was the sort of time frame that I was sticking at most jobs and then moving on to somewhere else. And then in 2004-2005, I went up to the next step, and I applied for train driver school, went to train driver school, and again I'll talk more detail about it. And then for the next 8 years, I have been a train driver. So I joined the Railways in 1994, and I became a fully qualified train driver in 2005. So that's an 11-year period. Of course, there's a lot of easier ways to do that, and I'll talk in general about some of those ways in upcoming episodes. I could have done it a lot quicker. Having said that, there are people that I started with at the same time who were still working at the very same station that I saw them at. There are people who are working at the station who were working there before me and are still there long after I've left, but they like doing it, and that's up to them. But over the years, as I said, I could have done it a lot quicker, but that is basically my story. And of course, in coming episodes, I'll go further into detail as much detail as I can, of course, into the various jobs, what they entail, and also some of my travel experience on networks around Australia and around the world. So that gives you a basic snapshot of my career, how I've worked my way up through the ranks. It's not necessarily the only way to do it. There are alternative options, but that's the way that I did it. And as a result of that, in the last 19 years, I've had some awesome experiences. I've seen some crazy things. I've seen some sad things. Of course, I'll be talking more about what I can in future episodes. But if you want to be anywhere in the industry, there's so many different ways that you can do it. And while there are some set progressions and the chain of command and how you progress with the organisation and that, all that sort of thing, there are so many places that you can go. Once you're actually in an organisation, there's so many places that you can go. Not necessarily those... You don't necessarily have to do anything involved in train operations, but that, to me, is a fun part. Anywho, thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed listening to me tell you a little bit about my career. And in coming weeks, of course, I will be talking more about what I've spoken about on this episode. If you want to get in contact with me, you can. Full details are on the website at channelerk.com. This has been episode 1 of On the Rails with Erk. I'm Erk. Thank you very much for listening. Check me out, other podcasts at channelerk.com. And until next time, this episode terminates here.
Due to defective brakes, the next train does not stop at this platform. Intending passengers should board this train by running down the platform. Doors may not be opened.